Hello, respected viewers, it's George from IMF. Thank you for coming back to the channel. So yesterday marked the 80th anniversary of D-Day, as in the Allied landings of Normandy, Canadians, Americans, Britons, various other nationalities, the Free French were involved, the Poles. And remember, at the time, France was under German military occupation, and it was really touch and go whether it was going to succeed. General Dwight D. Eisenhower was the American commander in command of also the other Allied forces. And it was really dice he was going to succeed or not. He wrote two messages, going to release one of them depending on the outcome. One hailing the triumph and said this is the beginning of liberation. Others acknowledging it was being cataclysmic and taking personal responsibility because, you know, it could have gone the other way. And one of the vital decisions at the last minute was to postpone by one day. It was supposed to take place on the 5th of June. And an Irish postmistress had the meteorological report and made it clear that the seas were going to be too rough on the 5th of June. They were actually fairly rough on the 6th of June, but they could cope with that. And there wasn't going to be another break in the weather for about a fortnight. So they went ahead with that. As a woman who was in County Mayo, remember Southern Ireland era, we were not participating in the Second World War, and there were no weather forecasts published in those days. The weather report was classified information because this would be influential decisions to attack or not to attack at various times. But anyway, it was a tremendous success, though a few thousand Allied soldiers got killed and several hundred Germans as well. So they had to find a place on the Atlantic coast of France where they could land with fairly flat beaches. And this is the first large-scale use of these amphibious landing vehicles in Western Europe. They'd used them in Sicily on a much smaller scale the year before. People often forget that was at July 1943 in Sicily, then mainland Italy. Of course, Italy was not so well defended. Sicily is an island itself, so the Italians couldn't muster that many forces there. Also knowing if the island fell, they couldn't evacuate troops and assets. And then the distance from Sicily to mainland Italy across that strait is actually very, very short. But this was significant, about 100 miles of the English Channel they had to go by. But obviously the Allies did a dummy. They pretended the real target was the Pas de Calais, the much shorter path. And so the Atlantic Wall had been built under General Erwin Rommel, who was Germany's real military genius fighting in the Western Desert. But perhaps he ought to have been in command of larger formations on the Eastern Front, because then he could have given full scope to his talents. Someone who was never a Nazi, was aware of the July plot, didn't participate, and was told to commit suicide so his family would be spared any dishonor when it came to light that he was cognizant of the plot to assassinate Hitler by other German officers to bring the war to an end. So they just put it out that he was killed in an air raid when that wasn't actually true. But and another thing is he happened to have gone back to Germany for his wife's, was it 50th birthday, Rommel, then had to rush back. But the Oberkommando der Wehrmacht was hoodwinked into thinking that Normandy was a feint, that the real assault was coming, the Pas de Calais, much shorter route, only 30 kilometers from Dover to Cap Griné. And dummy armies were created, dumb radio signals between non-existent units were created, and inflatable tanks and trucks and boats and everything like that. So the Luftwaffe would think the real army was there in Kent waiting to cross. And that's why, there were orders to bring more reinforcements to Normandy. Hitler countermanded that, held them back in reserve to go to the Pas de Calais for an assault that never came. It took them several days for the Germans to realize that that it was wrong. So that was the longest day. It was the largest seaborne landing in history. And I'm told these things are very, very difficult to do. And there were formidable German defenses, all those concrete bunkers. I remember when I was little in France, in Aquitaine, Gironde, there near Arcachon and La Dune de Pilat, seeing them. And there was a retired German soldier, an old guy, who actually bought the one he'd been stationed in years before and used it as a wine cellar. So it was a turning point in the Second World War. Remember, the Soviets are suffering horrifically, millions of them being killed. I mean, millions, and that includes millions of civilians. And the Soviets saying, you must be helping us. Attack, attack, attack. A major landing in 1942. It was the Saint-Nazaire raid, it was the Dieppe raid in 43. Significant losses for the Canadians and the Brits, but they weren't going to do that landing. Then they said land in Italy, but Stalin said, Italy's not a very significant country. It's got to be against German-ruled territory. But by having those bases in southern Italy, the Allied air forces could bomb Germany even more effectively, fighting their way up the prickly spine of Italy, because the Apennine Mountains, Italy is actually quite defensible when attacking from south to north or north to south, because there's only a few kilometers on either coast, which is fairly flat, where trucks and tanks can go very easily. Otherwise, there are these narrow twisting roads up into the mountain passes, quite easily for Mussolini's fascist forces to defend. Remember, September 1943, Italy surrendered, and 2 weeks later, joined the Allied side, declared war on Germany. The king had done that. The prime minister had been sacked, Mussolini, another one of Pietro Badoglio appointed instead. So the majority of Italians were on the Allied side from that point onwards, but a few fanatical fascists took Mussolini's side. Most fascists had turned against him at this point. Two-thirds of his own Grand Council of Fascists had turned against him. But D-Day was very significant because there was a third front, really, the Eastern Front, the Southern Front, if you will, in Italy, and then a Western Front. And so the German forces were hopelessly divided. The film's about it, The Longest Day, Saving Private Ryan. And I was glad that Saving Private Ryan did something to bring home the horror of it. I mean, not that I've ever been near combat, thank goodness, but it's not all glamorous. And the Allied troops were not all angels. Okay, and obviously some of them were morally good, but there'd be morally good people on the German side as well. They're human beings too. And some of these war films are frankly Teutonophobic. They're racist, having those monodimensional monsters, and it's just not like that. The difficult and complicated truth is that good people fight for bad causes and vice versa. And most of us are multidimensional. It has some American troops willfully shooting dead some unarmed men who are surrendering. It turns out they're actually speaking Slovakian, the guys are trying to surrender. There were some Slovak laborers there, and so on. So it was very important in the Second World War. People, the Allies thought that once the Allies landed in significant numbers on the Atlantic coast, that Germany collapsed quite quickly. To their surprise, Germany fought on for another 11 months. Now, the French laid on a fantastic show. Lots of head of state, the King Willem-Alexander of the Netherlands was there, and the Dutch Prime Minister. Obviously, King Charles III and his good wife, Rishi Sunak, and so on, the Canadian Prime Minister, Justin Trudeau, perhaps I won't know them all, and Olaf Scholz, the German Chancellor. Let's be beastly to the Germans, as the Noel Coward song goes. Always feel a bit gauche on their behalf, because it's sort of celebrating the defeat of Germany, and almost like every German who gets killed, that's a good thing. We should only feel pity for the Allied soldiers. But obviously the German soldiers are just as deserving of human sympathy. And it's not as though that Allies' record in the war was entirely blameless. You know, Allied countries invaded others in the war, but Iran was a focus of unprovoked invasion by the United Kingdom and the Soviet Union, a fact that very few people in the West would know. And so on, that the Soviets were allowed to keep their ill-gotten gains from the invasion of Latvia, Lithuania, Estonia, some of Finland, half of Poland, a bit of Romania called Moldova, and bit of Czechoslovakia. But that's people just overlook that because it doesn't suit the narrative of angels versus devils, that it's some sort of morality play. Not that the Third Reich was good. No, it was evil. No question about that. And there were many huge-scale atrocities committed by the Third Reich, but some atrocities committed by the Allies as well. And that is the uncomfortable truth. And it just doesn't suit some very blinkered, bigoted people to face up to the unwelcome facts. So in some ways it was marvelous what they put on, and they had some D-Day veterans, some of them were honored Legion of Honor. But I wondered the Legion of Honor was a bit much for some of them. I mean, obviously we have to appreciate them, but that should be for the very highest. Really, they're being awarded for still being alive. So these people are over 100. This is the last Jubilee year in which there'll be a serious number of D-Day veterans alive, because it's 80 years ago. And when the 100th anniversary, few, if any, will be alive. Very few people make it to like 118, and nobody under 18 was going to participate. So Zelensky was there and came in last to a rapturous reception, him and his first lady, and hugged and kissed and so on. Biden made the comparisons explicit between the Second World War and the Russo-Ukrainian War, which Putin likes to do as well. That's somewhat misleading and inapt. But anyway, I appreciate the spirit. And obviously no Russian or Belarusian delegates were invited. Of course, they didn't participate in D-Day. Neither did Ukrainians, really. So Rishi Sunak really let the side down by leaving very early to go and do an interview. There'll never be another 80th anniversary of D-Day. You can do an interview some other time. You could have waited an hour or something like that. So I think he really misread the public mood. Keir Starmer, leader of His Majesty's Most Loyal Opposition, was there and had a word with Zelensky. So Zelensky then went on to address the French National Assembly next day, obviously had a one-on-one meeting with Joe Biden and so forth. So overall, I think it was very bien fait by the French. And that's why Putin wasn't there, a calculated diplomatic snub. And does he deserve it? Because he's always trading on the Second World War, harping on and on and on about it. It's always the Second World War all over again. Anyone who doesn't agree with him and everything is a Nazi. And then he really misuses that, the Nazi himself. What do you think? So thank you for your comments. Please subscribe on Patreon, donate on PayPal, georgecallahan79@gmail.com. Toodaloo.